from our nation's capital, it's Health, Law, and Politics. With your host, the man who has defeated the Food and Drug Administration more times in court than any other attorney in American history, Jonathan Emory.
Welcome to Health, Law, and Politics, and thank you for joining us. On today's show, we examine some of the most commonly prescribed drugs in America, the cholesterol-lowering statin drugs. Over 25 million Americans take statin drugs, and the drug companies net some $23 billion a year from the sale of these drugs. Among the best-selling statins are Lipitor, Lescol, Mevacor, Pravacol, Zocor, Crestor, and Vytorin. The statins work by interfering with HMG-CoA reductase, an enzyme necessary for the body's manufacture of cholesterol. They also have the unplanned effect of blocking the endogenous production of another enzyme, coenzyme Q10, an essential enzyme for the normal functioning of all major muscles in the body. That CoQ10 suppression effect increases the risk of heart failure and myopathies of all major muscles. The drug also interferes with the body's use of an essential antioxidant, selenium, and the drug may also cause liver problems. In 2001, the Expert Panel on Detection, Evaluation, and Treatment of High Blood Cholesterol in Adults wrote new guidelines for determining when doctors should prescribe statins. These guidelines help the drug companies pocket billions and dramatically expanded the, indeed doubled, the number of people who would be told to take these statin drugs. People without any cardiovascular disease at all are now being told by their physicians to take statin drugs as a preventive when they have LDL cholesterol levels of 130 or higher. The science about statins does not show that they reduce the risk of heart disease or stroke in any population except those with diagnosed cardiovascular disease. Even in those with cardiovascular disease, however, long-term use of statins, that is over 4 years, appears to increase the risk of heart attack and stroke, precisely the opposite of the desired effect, and it also appears to increase the risk of cancer. In a 2002 study published in the British medical journal The Lancet, people between ages 70 and 82 at high risk of developing heart disease were placed on statin therapy. The so-called PROSPER study, Pravastatin in Elderly Individuals at Risk of Vascular Disease, revealed the drug to produce no reduction in the risk of heart disease or stroke. But the study did show that statin therapy significantly increased the risk of cancer. The risk of cancer increased each year the elderly patients took the statins. By the fourth year, there was more than one extra case of cancer for every 100 people taking a statin each year. So, ladies and gentlemen, the statin drugs, some of the most popularly prescribed drugs in America, now reaching people, not only those with active cardiovascular disease, but those who are healthy, normal adults, are being told for the first time in American history to take drug therapy to reduce a future unknown potential of contracting cardiovascular disease. And the drug itself is one that has significant adverse effects. We have with us today an expert who is one of the world's leading authorities on the statin drugs and on coenzyme Q10. Peter Langjian, MD, has been practicing cardiology since 1985 after 5 years of invasive cardiology at the University of Texas Health Center at Tyler, Texas. He entered private practice and for the past 16 years has worked exclusively as a non-invasive cardiologist, specializing in congestive heart failure, primary and statin-induced diastolic dysfunction, and other diseases of the heart muscle. Dr. Langjian has studied the clinical application of CoQ10 to the treatment of a broad range of cardiovascular diseases since 1981. And over the past 3 years, Dr. Langjian and his wife, Elena, have established a research laboratory for the measurement of both reduced and oxidized CoQ10 in both plasma and tissue. So we have the good fortune of having with us today Dr. Peter Langjian. Welcome to Health Law and Politics, Dr. Langjian.
I'm happy to be here.
We have just a few minutes before the break, but I did want to ask you right off the bat, do you think that the statin drugs are safe treatments for cardiovascular disease or the risk of cardiovascular disease?
Absolutely not. I think their harm far, far outweighs the little bit of anti-inflammatory benefit that you get from them. You can show a slight benefit, like you mentioned earlier, in people with established disease that's irrespective of cholesterol lowering. So they have a little anti-inflammatory benefit. It's, of course, exaggerated. It's real. But it's way, way counterbalanced by the negative effects, which are really something.
We'll be right back after this break, and we're going to ask Dr. Langjian whether we could to explain to us how these statin drugs work. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back. Stay with us for this important discussion.
Welcome back to Health Law and Politics with our host, constitutional lawyer, Jonathan Emert.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Today we have the good fortune of having with us Dr. Peter Langjian, who's one of the world's leading experts on CoQ10 and also on cardiovascular disease. He's a cardiologist, but also on the statins. And before the break, Dr. Langjian, I suggested we're going to ask you this question, so let's get to it. How do the statins work? What is it about them that reduces cholesterol, and is that a good thing?
How they work is pretty fascinating, actually. They block a very, very complex biochemical pathway present in every cell in your body. And it's a pathway that produces not only cholesterol, but many other compounds, one of which is the vitamin-like nutrient coenzyme Q10 that I've done a lot of work with. But it also blocks production of other substances that we don't quite know as much about. There's a class of molecules called prenyl proteins, and then there's another fatty molecule called dolichol. But it's the drugs block this pathway very early on. And so if you get a 40 or 50% reduction in cholesterol synthesis, you get a 40 or 50% reduction in coenzyme Q10. It's unavoidable. And that's one of the reasons why they're such toxic compounds, is because this is an essential part of cellular chemistry that's being interfered with. And it wasn't quite so bad when these drugs were used in smaller doses. You know, they're better tolerated. But what we've seen in the last few years is a real aggressive expansion of these drugs into the elderly and also to the healthy, people who have, you know, they're absolutely healthy, nothing's wrong with them. And the elderly, it's interesting because they're so fragile anyway. You know, you've already got naturally low CoQ10 levels in the elderly. Your brain is atrophies with time, and so if you put an 80-year-old patient on a statin, it's a virtual certainty that you're going to interfere with their memory, you know, their cognition, not to mention the, you know, fatigue and, you know, a whole host of aches and pains. But it's an amazing class of drugs because it so powerfully blocks this pathway that cholesterol levels are dramatically reduced. And that has a psychological benefit. You know, there's been a sort of a creation of a cholesterol neurosis over the last 60 years. Cholesterol has been so vilified that your average patient and your average doctor believe that it's an evil, bad substance. Of course, it's not. And so when
well,
the number
on that point, down, on that point, better. Dr. Langjian, what? On that point, sorry to interrupt, but on that very point, You know, the common perception in the public is that high cholesterol, high LDL cholesterol, is bad and will lead to a heart attack or a stroke, and that their doctors are giving them the statins, they believe, for the purpose of knocking down this bad LDL cholesterol so that they won't end up at risk of a heart attack or a stroke. Is that not true?
Yes, it's definitely not true. It's true that that's the intent, but it's a complete myth. I mean, cholesterol does not cause heart disease. It's perhaps the most lucrative and long-lasting myth in medical history, and I don't think it's going to die anytime soon either, not in my lifetime. But, you know, the myth that cholesterol causes heart disease wasn't the big malignant problem it is now before the introduction of statins in 1987. Before statins, all the cholesterol-lowering drugs and dietary interventions were pretty harmless. They didn't work particularly, but they didn't do a lot of harm. But you're right, it's generally believed by almost all physicians that LDL cholesterol is causative for atherosclerosis, and it's just not.
And it is not. Well, what do people do when they've been told by their physicians that they have an elevated cholesterol level and they ought to be on the statin drugs? What precautionary points would you raise about that advice?
Oh, boy, it's a tough one. Because what happens is, you know, this could be a physician that the patient has known all their life, you know, help them out of some tight spots with a variety of illnesses. And unfortunately, doctors genuinely and completely believe this. They take statins themselves. And so it's a really tough problem. But the best advice I could give people in general is just to trust your own senses. You know, if anything that you're taking seems to be making you feel poorly, you should question it. I mean, that's the best advice I can think of. But it's a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing to challenge a physician on. You know, you can, but then you end up having to change doctors, and it's a pretty big mess.
Well, is there, if you have elevated cholesterol, you've been told by your physician you have elevated cholesterol levels, LDL levels, and that you need to bring those levels down in order to reduce your risk of heart attack and stroke. You've already said that that is not so, that it's not, well, here we go with the commercial break. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to ask Dr. Langjian to tell us what perverse effects occur to the human body upon prolonged use of the statin drugs. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned. We have one of the world's leading experts on the subject, Dr. Peter Langjian, with us today. And he's been practicing cardiology since 1985 and studying the statins and their adverse effects on the human body, as well as studying coenzyme Q10, one of the things that the statins reduce or prevent people from having. So, in any event, Dr. Langjian, what is the what are some of the perverse effects of the statin drugs?
Well, you can divide them into several categories. I would mention first that the lowering of cholesterol itself causes problems. So, the brain, it's the dry weight of the brain, more than half of it is cholesterol. It's an enormously important compound for normal brain function and nerve function. So lowering cholesterol itself causes trouble, and I think that's probably one of the reasons there's so much cognitive decline in people taking statins. You know, we know that after the age of 65, the lower your cholesterol is, the higher your all-cause mortality is. So cholesterol cannot be viewed as a bad thing, and it certainly cannot be viewed as something that can be recklessly or aggressively lowered. So anyway, that's number one. And then number two is the interruption of the synthesis of coenzyme Q10. That coenzyme is absolutely essential for cellular energy production in every cell of your body. And those cells that use the most energy are the first to suffer when it's a little low, and that's muscle, heart muscle in particular. And so what tends to happen with statins is there's a gradual decline in people's ability to sort of do what they used to do, and it comes on frequently, very, very gradually over a period of years. And they get more and more fatigued, and they get more and more irritable, and, you know, it's insidious. And you frequently won't attribute these side effects to something that you may have started 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. And then, of course, you have to say there's no question they're carcinogenic. Statins are carcinogenic in animal models, and they're, as you mentioned earlier in your introductory remarks, cancer went up in the PROSPER study and in the CARE study. So they're carcinogenic, and we may not see really how bad that problem is until another decade or so goes by.
What kinds of cancers do these drugs cause?
In the CARE study, it increased breast cancer. In the PROSPER study, it increased many different types of cancer. It wasn't one specific type.
And what can we do about the problem of substituting something for these drugs? What when people are told that their option is to take a statin, what else can they do?
Well, what they can do, if they feel compelled to do something about the cholesterol, or just do something good for their health, those are two different things. But there's real simple, safe things, like avoiding trans fats, which I think are harmful as all get out, increasing omega-3 oils, which we don't get a lot of in our diet. Exercise is great. You know, intermittent, enjoyable exercise decreases stress. It's one of the few things that's known to increase the synthesis of CoQ10 is exercise. So you can do real simple lifestyle things. If you're overweight, lose some weight. And those things work. Your cholesterol may not change very much, but you'll definitely be healthier. And those are the things I tend to emphasize to my patients.
I know a fellow who his doctors put him on statins, and he's a professional athlete, really. He has outstanding... he's a bicyclist. He's very physically fit. You'd never know he had. It looks like we got a commercial. But when we come back, I'm going to tell you about his problem and see what you might recommend for him. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with more of this fascinating subject. Stay tuned. One of the things that I was describing before the break was a little factual circumstance for you, Dr. Langer. And I'm familiar with a fellow who has been on the statins, off the statins, put back on the statins. He is a athlete, at top form, one of the best cyclists in the world. Cycles some 60, 70 miles a day just to do a little exercise, and seems to have no physical problems other than an extremely elevated cholesterol level, well over 300 in the LDL. And he was placed on the statins, of course, by his physician. He took the statins for years. He didn't feel particularly great and decided that he would try to stop them. He talked to another physician who took him off the statins and had him go on an exercise and diet program. But shortly after he got off the statins, cholesterol just raced right back up again. What does this person, what do people who are in that sort of situation need to understand about these drugs and about cholesterol levels and their risks of heart disease or cancer or heart disease or heart attack or stroke?
Well, they first need to realize that cholesterol, even when they're quite high, in the 300 or 400 range, are still not the big evil problem that they're made out to be. That's number one. That's a real difficult message to get across, though. It's, you know, we've had generations of sort of brainwashing efforts to the contrary. But anyway,
why is it that people, you know, what? How can you disabuse someone of the notion that high cholesterol is not a death knell, a warning that they're going to croak of a heart attack or a stroke?
You know, one thing I do sometimes just to sort of allay their anxiety a little bit is when I see someone just like you're describing, and they're everybody and everything they've ever heard their whole life indicates that this cholesterol is a real bad thing. I will do a carotid DOP scan on them in the office, you know, which is non-invasive ultrasound. Just look at your carotid arteries. And you can show someone that their arteries are absolutely perfectly normal, which usually they are. And, you know, if there's not even a bump or a plaque or anything, you can say, well, look, here you are, whatever age they might be, 40, 50 years of age. You've got this familial trait where you just make a lot of cholesterol. And it's done nothing to you. I mean, your arteries are perfect. And sometimes that's helpful. It's sort of, it gets the message, you know, that it's not the bad, evil thing we thought it was. But at any rate, but it's tough, though. Sometimes people are so darn anxious about their cholesterol that I will put them on a statin, always a low dose, and I'll do it with some CoQ10. I'll have them take you to offset the CoQ10 lowering. And then it's usually pretty well tolerated. They feel better, at least psychologically speaking. And I feel like I'm not doing too much harm because
Well, how do the statins increase your cancer risk? What are they doing that is interfering with the body's ability to diminish your risk of cancer?
You know, I don't know if anybody really knows that. We know that, you know, when you interfere with Q, you interfere with coenzyme Q. You interfere with all bioenergetics, which includes your immune system. And we know that patients with cancer tend to have low Q levels as compared to the same age people that don't have cancer. So it may be that your entire immune and cancer surveillance or defenses are affected. It makes sense.
And then you've discussed memory problems that have been associated with coenzyme or with the statins. How do the statins interfere with memory function? Is it because they're lowering cholesterol that they're interfering with brain function?
Yeah, the brain is real interesting. It cannot get cholesterol from the blood. You know, the blood-brain barriers won't allow the transport of cholesterol. So all the cholesterol in the brain, and there's a lot of it, is made in the brain. And these statins get in your brain and they block these cells' ability to make cholesterol, and it's just essential for normal brain function. It's a, you know, it's not there for no reason.
Well, does it increase your risk of Alzheimer's?
Well, you know, it's not Alzheimer's. It's a real interesting thing. They're used so frequently in the elderly now that new patients coming in that I see for the first time are frequently on a statin and they're having trouble with a variety of things. And the type of memory problems they get is different from Alzheimer's. They don't even look the same. It's it's an odd thing, but I've almost got to where I can recognize when people are on a statin.
Wow.
It's an interesting thing. Are you familiar with Beatrice Galom out in San Diego?
No.
She's a PhD MD that's in the process of getting NIH funding for a really good statin study looking at neurocognitive function in a real sophisticated way. This woman's an absolute genius, by the way. She's incredible. Anyway, that study will be really, really revealing once it's accomplished. But because she's an expert in neurologic function and how to measure it, and that'll be great when that comes out.
Now, the statins also increase your risk of heart failure and also neurological problems that are associated with various other cardiovascular issues. Tell us about that. How does this drug that's supposed to reduce your risk of heart attack and stroke, actually it's only identified as lowering cholesterol, but supposed to reduce your risk of heart attack and stroke, according to the conventional wisdom, ends up increasing your risk of heart failure?
Well, the heart failure question is pretty easy to answer. That's related to CoQ10 depletion. There's no question about it. In a small study that we did recently, and we published it in the American Journal of Cardiology, we took a small group of patients who had elevated cholesterol by today's guidelines, and we put them on a relatively modest dose of Lipitor, 20 milligrams a day. And after 6 months, 70% developed heart muscle weakening.
Wow, we're going to talk about that study. Let's talk some more about that study right after the break. That's fascinating. Thank you. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with more with Dr. Langjian. So stay tuned. We're talking about the statin drugs, and they ain't what everyone says they are. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about the statin drugs. Over 20 million Americans are taking those drugs every single day to lower their cholesterol levels. And what we're finding out from Dr. Langjian, one of the world's leading experts on the subject, is that these drugs are basically poison, and that Americans out there may be lowering their cholesterol, but they're doing it at a considerable cost. They're increasing their risk of actual heart attack and stroke, the very thing that they're supposed to be reducing their risk of when they consume these things for over 4 years. And they're also increasing their risk of cancer and also of heart failure as a result of the coenzyme Q10 reduction effects of the same substance, the same drug, coenzyme Q10 being an essential energy ATP contributor into the muscles. Dr. Langjian, we were talking before the break about the coenzyme Q10 reduction effects and how that might increase the risk of heart failure. How does that work? When these drugs lower coenzyme Q10, first of all, tell us how coenzyme Q10 works in the body, and then what the dramatic lowering of coenzyme Q10 can do to somebody over time.
Well, coenzyme Q is the coenzyme, like a small cofactor, if you want to think of it that way, for very large enzyme complexes in your mitochondria. These are the little powerhouses and cells that produce 90% of your ATP, which is cellular energy. And heart muscle, because it works constantly, normally has more CoQ10 in it than any other tissue in your body. Very, very highly concentrated in CoQ10, which makes it very vulnerable to dysfunction if it's even a little bit low. And so you can demonstrate heart muscle weakening in as short a time as 6 months with statins that's then reversed back to normal when you add supplemental Q. So we're pretty sure about that. I should say this, for every side effect or adverse effect of statins, there's at least one study out there that shows that statins benefit that problem. there's a study that suggests that statins help dementias or help Alzheimer's. There's a study that they help cancer. And there's two or three studies suggesting that they help congestive heart failure. So there's a lot. The literature is just full of confusing, contradictory.
Well, why is that? Do the drug companies tend to promote particular kinds of research and results that are not actually accurate?
Of course, yeah. They're a pretty slimy bunch, you know. They do a lot of things. One of the most common things they do is if a study starts to, you know, show some unfavorable effects, they just don't publish it. It never sees the light of day. That's real common. Now, there's many ways that, especially these multi-center trials, where no one group of physicians or investigators has access to all the data, you know, they can do anything they want with it. You know, I can't tell you how many times, just in not just statins, but just the whole history of medicine, that there's a lot of favorable papers on some new device or drug that ends up, you know, coming off the market because it's a total disaster.
So are the drug companies then influencing the content of the peer-reviewed journals so that doctors are led to believe that statins are more beneficial than they actually are?
I think there's no question that's the case. Definitely.
And so we're basically operating under an enormous fraud. We've got the drug companies influencing the content of the medical journals, doctors looking at the medical journals and listening to the representatives from the drug companies coming to their offices, all believing this information to be true, passing it on to patients, and then patients believing it to be true. So we have an endless cycle of deception. Is that fair to say?
It is. I would state that the exception to that is there are occasional non-pharmaceutical funded studies, like the NIH-funded study that looked at postmenopausal estrogens a few years ago was very well designed and clearly showed that postmenopausal estrogens were bad for you in just about every way. So. And we may see more studies like that as the government takes over the burden of paying for medicines for the elderly. Maybe we'll see some good, honest government-funded studies. You know,
well, Dr. Langston, how do you distinguish the good science from the bad? How do you know?
The number one thing is see who funded the study. See if it's a drug company study or not. And if it is, you just have to take it with a ton of skepticism.
Now, the National Cholesterol Program changed the standards for determining when statins would be prescribed. Why did that happen? How did that take place, and is there a sound scientific basis for that determination?
No, there was no scientific basis for that determination. That was strictly just to expand the market. There's no question about it. Even if you believe the that statins were beneficial, it's absolutely a fact that their benefit does not correlate with the degree of cholesterol lowering. So whether your cholesterol goes down a little bit or whether it goes down a lot is irrelevant. And so this idea of lowering the target or ideal cholesterol is absurd. I mean, and the people who came up with those new guidelines, many of them have clear conflicts of interest. You know, they're paid consultants for the pharmaceutical companies. You know, that's a sham. That whole guideline thing is ridiculous.
And this, of course, is sponsored by the federal government and is promoted by the federal government. Is it the case that we can't count the Food and Drug Administration to be out of the influence of the drug companies? Is the Food and Drug Administration essentially a patsy for these same interests, these same drug company interests?
It seems that way to me. I mean, I'm not an expert on the FDA by any means, but just from my perspective, I certainly don't trust them.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. After this break, we're going to ask Dr. Langston whether or not the Food and Drug Administration did the right thing when it approved statins for the market. I think we know what the answer is there, but we're going to ask them how that came to pass. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Health Law and Politics with our host, constitutional lawyer, Jonathan Emort.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We have with us Dr. Peter Langjian, who's one of the leading experts in the world in cardiology and in the study of the statins and the study of coenzyme Q10. Dr. Langjian, how did the FDA come to approve the statin drugs?
You know, it's a really interesting story, and there was a paper. The authors, I think it came out of San Francisco, and it was published in JAMA, 8 or 9 years ago. I don't remember their names. But at any rate, the gist of it is they went to the trouble to really look into the details of the approval of the first statin, Mevacor. And the first advisory committee to the FDA advised against the marketing of statins because of the cancer problem. You know, all new drugs have to go through certain, carcinogenic testing, and the statins were terrible. They caused cancer in the standard laboratory models that all drugs are judged by. And what they did is they just got a different advisory committee. They fired that bunch. Got a new committee and then got it approved. But that's a great paper. I just can't remember the author's names right now. But it was
Please do send me a copy of it, and we'll mention it on the air in a subsequent edition of the program.
Yeah, I'll dig it up. I'll email it to you or something.
Is there ever a circumstance when you would recommend that someone take a statin?
Almost never. The exception is sort of like the gentleman you've mentioned who is really worried about his cholesterol. I'll use a small dose. I'll use it with Q, and I just follow them. And sometimes, even when you do that, they still start having side effects, and then you end up stopping it. But
when you think about the future, and some 25, 26 million Americans taking the statins every single day. Are we going to see adverse effects resulting from those statins popping up all over the United States?
Oh, I think no question. I think it's a looming tragedy of unparalleled proportions. There's never been anything like it. And like I mentioned earlier, one of the worst things about statins is this delayed adverse effect. You know, you can take an incredibly toxic drug like, say, a chemotherapy drug. Everybody knows they're toxic. You get sick right away when you get given these drugs. But statins they're unique in this ability to sort of sneak up on you after years and years.
Well, Dr. Langjian, thank you so much for being with us. Ladies and gentlemen, we've had the privilege of having with us Dr. Peter Langjian, who's one of the world's leading experts in cardiology and the study of the statins and coenzyme Q10. He's been practicing cardiology since 1985. He's in Tyler, Texas, at the East Texas Medical Center. Dr. Langjian, thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Well, as we turn to think about the statins, ladies and gentlemen, reflect upon the fact that here is a drug that the Food and Drug Administration has approved as safe and effective. Yet another example of how a drug that the federal government has determined to be safe and effective is in fact not. And just think of all those millions of Americans, you may be one of them, taking statins every day, trusting in your physician to get that information and to use that information to keep yourself healthy, but discovering to the contrary that that information is leading you to put yourself at risk of cancer, risk of a heart attack, risk of a stroke. The very things the drug was supposed to prevent, the drug is increasing your risk of. So, after the news break, we'll be back with Byron Richards, who will explain to us his views on this issue. He's been on this program before, so stay tuned. After the news, we'll be back with more.
And now, live from our nation's capital, it's Health, Law, and Politics, with your host, the man who has defeated the Food and Drug Administration more times in court than any other attorney in American history, Jonathan Emory.
Welcome back to Health, Law, and Politics, ladies and gentlemen. Today we're talking about the statin drugs. Over 25 million Americans take statin drugs. You may be among them. And from Dr. Peter Langen, one of the world's leading experts on the statins, we heard in the first hour that these substances are in fact poisons, that they are in fact causing people to be at increased risk over time of heart attack and stroke, the very things these drugs are supposed to treat, as well as a greater risk of cancer, a significantly greater risk of cancer, and a risk of heart failure as a result of reduction in coenzyme Q10. Those are among a series of adverse effects that these drugs cause and make this drug something that never should have been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. Nevertheless, it has been. And why is that? What is it about the Food and Drug Administration that is allowing it to approve such drugs as this? In our last program, we talked about the bisphosphonates, the drugs Fosamax, Beneva, and Actonel, and how those drugs were too unsafe to be approved. We had Dr. David Graham on an earlier edition of the program. He's the FDA Associate Director of Drug Safety, who testified before Congress that FDA had approved over two dozen drugs that were too unsafe to be entered into the marketplace. Why is it? Why is it that the agency of the federal government that Congress entrusts with the duty of protecting the American health from dangerous drugs is in fact in the business of approving dangerous drugs and working with the drug companies to protect those drugs, keep them on the market, even when they are sacrificing Americans' health? What is it that's that the basis for this action of the government? Well, it's clearly corruption, and the reason for it is that the FDA has become the handmaiden of the pharmaceutical industry. It is performing the drug companies' bidding. It is protecting those companies and their quest for profit over the health and safety of the American people. And this has got to change. Well, we have the privilege of having with us now an individual who's written an excellent book, Fight for Your Health, Exposing the FDA's Betrayal of America. You should get a copy of this book because Byron Richards, the author, who's a board-certified clinical nutritionist, exposes many of the corrupt practices of the Food and Drug Administration and their efforts to protect the drug industry from competition, even at the expense of America's health. Byron Richards is a board-certified clinical nutritionist, the author of this book, Fight for Your Health, Exposing FDA's Betrayal of America, and he's with us here today. Byron, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you, Jonathan. It's nice to be with you this afternoon.
Well, we're talking about the statins today, and I noticed that in your book where you discuss the statins, you've basically thrown the gauntlet down here. There's no question in my mind after reading your book, the section of your book concerning this, that you've come to the conclusion that the FDA is part and parcel with the drug companies in an effort to get this one past the American public, even though it's too unsafe. What is it that causes the government of the United States to be in the business of protecting dangerous drugs? Your book chapter here, chapter 19, Death by Statin, if I may just read two sentences, the first two sentences, you say, the statin drugs for lowering cholesterol are a daily dose of poison that has nothing to do with optimal health. The fact that Americans have been thoroughly hoodwinked is a testament to drug company control of the FDA and superior marketing talent. What is the basis for your statements?
Well, most Americans do truly believe there's such a thing as bad cholesterol, known as LDL cholesterol. In reality, LDL cholesterol is absolutely vital for transporting nutrition in the body, for bolstering energy production, for combating stress, for making the antioxidants that are critical to defending the body from cancer and other illnesses. And so it's really a very slick marketing campaign where people actually think it's bad, and thus when they hear a number that's high, they're willing to take a drug. That's a stimulus response ideal dream for the drug companies, where they can just float a test in front of somebody and the doctor doesn't have to actually think about the patient sitting in front of him or her.
So you're saying that elevated LDL cholesterol is not necessarily what we may call a disease?
Well, not at all. In fact, most physicians don't understand normal reasons why somebody's cholesterol level might go up, such as an infection they're fighting or exposure to toxins. And in fact, when you take a toxic individual and you lower their LDL cholesterol with a drug, you actually strip out part of their natural defense system against poison, and that exposes the body to extra risk for mutation that can in fact lead to cancer. So these are some of the things that physicians don't even bother to explore with patients when they're looking at a cholesterol lab result and then just automatically suggesting the use of a medication.
Well, in the battle for people's minds, I can't think of one battle that has been more successfully won by the drug companies than the notion that elevated cholesterol is bad for you. We've got a break coming up here. We're going to talk more with Byron Richards about this issue. Stay with us, ladies and gentlemen. This is fascinating, and we hope to get to some of the core reasons why it's happening. We'll be right back. Before the break, we were talking about this battle of ideas where the drug companies appear to have won out a little over a decade ago in securing this notion that elevated LDL cholesterol is a death knell, signals that you're going to have a heart attack, you're going to have a stroke. How did that happen, Byron? What happened to cause us as a people, even the whole medical community, to accept as a truism that elevated cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, is a very bad thing?
I think what so often happens, Jonathan, is that once there is a drug that affects some aspect of metabolism, a campaign is built around it to market it, to concoct science that tends to support it or at least plausibly supports half-truths. In other words, everybody knows that if the arteries are clogged with cholesterol-containing plaque, that's not a good thing. So a lot of, you know, and so when we see LDL cholesterol building up in the arteries, that's clearly not a good health situation. However, nobody asks, how did it get there? Why is it there? I mean, LDL cholesterol, I always like to use the analogy, it's like a UPS truck driving packages around in the human body. The human body must have a way to get fat-soluble substances out of the blood and to cells. So everything fat-soluble, every fatty acid, every piece of fat, every fat-soluble antioxidant like vitamin A and coenzyme Q10 and vitamin K, these all have to be transported on that LDL UPS truck. That's how it gets anywhere. So when we see this very useful molecule all of a sudden lining up or lining the arteries, people go, well, that's not good. But if we saw UPS trucks lining our streets, you know, off in the ditches, we wouldn't automatically assume they're bad and they have to be eliminated. We'd ask the question, how did they get there? And that's the whole issue. They get there from inflammation, from toxins, from chemicals. They get there from damage caused by the multiple drugs that people are given. They get there from damage from the toxins in our food supply, the chemicals on our food, the pollution in our air, the PCBs that have never been cleaned up, the fluoride that's poisoning people. There are multiple poisons that damage this vital molecule, and that is the reason why this is a problem.
Byron, some 25 million Americans are on statin drugs. They're taking them every day. I'm sure a number of the people listening to this broadcast are taking statin drugs. What do they have to worry about when they're on these drugs? I mean, a lot of these people have been sold hook, line, and sinker on the notion that if they don't take these drugs, they're going to have runaway LDL cholesterol, and it's going to kill them. What do these people need to know about those drugs?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, whenever you're working on a health program, you must have energy. So any substance that is anti-energy is a problem. Now, LDL is the backbone of energy synthesis in the human body. It helps make all the steroid hormones that control energy regulation. So any person who is getting tired, fatigued, muscle weakness, not thinking as clearly, these are all signs that the drug is not actually helping metabolism or helping even the benefit of living longer, because anything that's anti-energy is anti-health. So people have to look at a little bit more subtle symptoms. Now, some people may be able to just take a little extra coenzyme Q10, about 100 milligrams a day, and they may not have those symptoms. But other people might, and of course the physicians don't seem to care unless there's true muscle tissue damage of an extreme nature. So there's a whole range of symptoms that just relate to not as energetic, not as clear-headed, that people really should be paying attention to in terms of adverse side effects, because we know with these drugs that the longer you take them, the worse they get. In other words, the longer you take a statin, if you're having problems with mental clarity, it actually kills brain cells progressively over time and can create memory loss and extreme neurological conditions that a lot of people don't realize because they didn't have that symptom right when they first started taking it. So a real kind of insidious aspect of those medications is that the side effects are progressive over time.
Well, what does someone do if they've been on the statins for a while, they're starting to experience the symptoms that you're talking about, and their doctor just basically says, well, we got to get that cholesterol down, you better keep taking it. What should someone begin to do to figure out how they can get a hold on this, or should they be that concerned to begin with?
Well, I think they should be very concerned. Anytime cholesterol is going up, you want to know why it's going up. And, of course, there are dietary reasons that can be involved with this, eating meals that are too big, eating too much sugar, eating too much refined carbohydrate, eating too many fats or just too much fat at one time. These are key things that can kind of clog up healthy cholesterol metabolism. In fact, I find that snacking between meals, which is heavily promoted by the American Dietetic Association, is one of the worst things people can do in terms of gumming up cholesterol metabolism. When people don't snack between meals and they don't eat after dinner and night, they have a much more efficient metabolism. And so, you know, part of cholesterol is eating properly, part is getting out and exercising. I think there are a couple of nutrients, like pantothene, is a form of vitamin B5. It's been extensively tested in Europe since the middle 1980s. It's extremely efficient at helping promote normal and healthy cholesterol metabolism.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Byron Richards, and this is a subject you won't want to miss, statin drugs. Stay tuned with us, and also if you have someone who's on the statin drugs, you might want to have them go to our archives at emore.com to get this edition of the program after it's been broadcast. We'll be back in just a moment, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Health Law and Politics with our host, constitutional lawyer, Jonathan Emort.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about the statin drugs. There are probably many of you out there on them. Some 25 million Americans are consuming them every day to lower their cholesterol levels. And it's not as pretty a picture as you may have been told by your physician. The statin drugs carry with them some pretty severe side effects. Long-term use can even increase your risk of heart attack and stroke, and it can also increase your risk of cancer, as well as increase your risk of cardiomyopathy and myopathies, that is, muscle weakness, in all major muscle groups in your body. Byron, the government set up this National Cholesterol Program, which changed the standards for determining when people should be put on the statins, and vastly expanded the number of people who will be recommended to take the statins from 15 million to well over 30 million Americans if these standards are fully implemented. And of course, they're largely fully implemented today. What caused the change in the standards to reduce the LDL levels? And is it a wise thing to cause people to be taking these drugs when their cholesterol level is 130 or above and they don't have any active cardiovascular disease?
Well, you're hitting on some very good points, Jonathan. And just this week, the British Medical published a major article based on Swedish research that showed that these higher levels of statins that are being promoted to a very, very low level are extremely risky and can create numerous problems in metabolism. This report was, of course, immediately long blasted by the Americans, who are big promoters. We've got to look at this. Lipitor selling, $12 billion worth of drug a year. That's an American company that's selling this stuff. This is a huge... And so we're seeing, the bottom line of it is, we're seeing vested interests and big money with a marketing machine against American consumer health, recognized on an international level that this is not a good thing.
Well, how is it that the American medical establishment has basically unthinkingly accepted the statins and is basically uncritically prescribing them in complete alignment with the desires of the drug companies? Isn't there any independence to the medical community? Don't we have a check on the prudence of prescribing these things?
We really don't. In fact, the medical associations that should know better accept so much money from these pharmaceutical companies in terms of funding and perks and vacations and all kinds of inducements to say what they are told. It's an out-of-control situation that's in desperate need of congressional oversight and dealing with these issues, because they have just got really out of hand.
Well, if somebody is out there and they're starting to experience muscle fatigue, or they're experiencing some of these adverse effects from the statins, and I imagine a good number will, you might be able to quantify that for us, but there, someone's experiencing an adverse effect from the statins, what should they do if their physician is the one who's told them that they should be on it?
Well, they must go and really tell their physician that they have got to look at this. This is a problem for them. Otherwise, I'd find another physician, get a second opinion. It's a difficult situation because we have a monopoly on who can give care and advice. But these higher levels of statin medications are very clearly anti-energy and produce many, many symptoms that are not necessarily, you know, what the medical people think of as severe enough side effects. Yet they're very anti-energy and anti-health. The thing about the statin drugs is they have a modest success benefit in terms of reducing cardiovascular second events once a person's already had a heart attack. It's never been proven that they'd be better than, say, a regimen of fish oil and vitamin E. That's never been tested. Yet they have some statistical data to show that they are helpful for these people in high-risk situations. Those need to be closely monitored. Where we're really running into trouble is a whole era of people that, for preventive health, are being targeted with these drugs where there's no evidence whatsoever to show that there's any health benefit long term. For every life potentially saved, a death is created in some other area, such as suicide, accident, cancer, these other areas. So we have a very expensive process over a 10-year period that shows no net benefit to society. It's truly a travesty. The FDA simply doesn't tell people what the risks are.
Byron, what are the numbers? How many people, given we've got some over 25 million Americans on the statins, how many people are likely to experience significant adverse events from these drugs?
Well, 1% of the people are likely to die from the drugs themselves over a 10-year period.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll let Byron answer the rest of that question after the break. We're going to figure out what the numbers are likely to be. A lot of people out there are either going to die or experience significant adverse effects as a result of these drugs. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Health Law and Politics with our host, constitutional lawyer, Jonathan Emort.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about the statin drugs. I have a little aside. I'd like to introduce a bit of history for you. Several years ago, on behalf of Dr. Julian Whitaker, we filed with the Food and Drug Administration a petition asking the FDA to alter the labeling for the statin drugs to alert physicians and consumers to the fact that statin drugs lower coenzyme Q10 levels. We've been discussing coenzyme Q10, an essential energy-producing coenzyme that, if depleted over time, can induce cardiomyopathy and myopathies in the major muscle groups. Myopathies are muscle weaknesses. It can even cause heart failure. So we asked the FDA to change the labeling for these drugs so that there could be a warning to people that it could reduce coenzyme Q10 levels in their bloodstream, and that they should discuss with their doctors supplementation with coenzyme Q10. The FDA refused to change the labeling of the drug products, and to this day stands by a decision that prevents the labeling from being changed to alert consumers to the fact that these drugs lower coenzyme Q10 levels. So powerful is the drug lobby, ladies and gentlemen, that even this beneficial information, which would reveal that these drugs have that deleterious effect, is blocked from the marketplace to ensure unfettered growth in profits for these drug substances. We have with us today Byron Richards, who's a certified, board-certified clinical nutritionist and the author of a fantastic book, Fight for Your Health, Exposing the FDA's Betrayal of America. I recommend it strongly, and if you get a chance, pick that book up, because I think you won't put it down until you've read it cover to cover. Byron, we were discussing before the break the fact that these drugs will cause adverse effects, many adverse effects, and I'm trying to get a figure in my mind how many people are likely to be affected. I know in the case of the coenzyme Q10 cardiomyopathy depletion effect of this drug, we had estimated, based on good science out there, scientific recommendations to us, that 1 to 3% of those taking the drugs would experience cardiomyopathy, and those numbers were quite significant, I think well over 200,000 people. Considering all of the adverse events that are likely to be caused by this drug, what numbers do you estimate we're talking about of people who will be suffering as a result of taking the drugs?
Well, it's a little bit on a relative scale, because 100% of the people who take it will be energy inefficient as a result of taking it. It's just a matter of how bad is that. There are estimates that as many as 50% of the people taking the medication are fatigued and have muscle weakness and just don't feel normal or right at all on the medication, which is an awful lot of people. One of the critical things besides coenzyme Q10 is the fact we now know, especially in the last couple of years, that this medication disrupts selenium function in the human body and reduces the ability of the critical antioxidant that protects cells and keeps them alive, called glutathione. It reduces its formation. So this is a true anti-health substance, and that is likely to have a profound adverse effect over the long haul, because when you lower that antioxidant enzyme, you increase free radical production throughout the entire human body, which speeds up the aging process. So now a person's left in a situation of, well, if I take this medication, it's going to make me age faster. On the other hand, my doctor's telling me that if I take this, it's going to prevent cardiovascular disease. And you know, there's no win situation here.
Well, if someone is not taking this drug or refuses to take this drug for whatever reason, maybe they listen to this broadcast, what can they do? What are the things that you can do with nutrition, with exercise, with diet? What can you do to improve your health and decrease your risk of a heart attack and a stroke?
Well, one of the more fascinating studies with exercise was within middle-aged men who had some signs of plaque going up into their brains. The carotid arteries had begun to get plaque in them. And they had two groups. One was a group of men who did aerobics three times a week and did not take any statins. And the other group was a group of men who took statins and exercised. And in over a five-year period, in the group that did not take any statins, they had a 40% reduction in their carotid artery stenosis by ultrasound, meaning they actually significantly improved from aerobic exercise. However, the men who took the statins and exercised had no improvement whatsoever, meaning that the drugs actually negated the benefits of exercise to reduce plaque in the arteries. A rather
wow.
Fascinating study. It's one of the ones I cite in the Fight for Your Health book. But so aerobic exercise, to answer one part of your question, is critical. Eating properly is another one. And it's not having no cholesterol in your diet or no saturated fat at all. It's eating meals that are the right size. They're just not too big. And really the culprits with cholesterol and diet are the refined sugar, the trans fatty acids, just meals that are too big, and the snacking issue. So those are some key points. My favorite nutrients for balancing cholesterol, helping to maintain normal levels, two of them. One is called pantothene. It's the coenzyme form of vitamin B5. It energetically helps transport cholesterol, helping to improve cholesterol fitness. And my other favorite one is tocotrienols, a special form of vitamin E that naturally regulate the enzymes involved with cholesterol synthesis. These are just nutrients that if you eat properly and exercise properly, they just assist normal cholesterol fitness. People have a tremendous number of things they can do, Jonathan, to improve the situation naturally.
All right, eating, taking tocotrienols, taking the pantothene, what was it?
It's called pantothene. It's the coenzyme form of pantothenic acid.
How about fish oils?
Fish oils are terrific. That would be another suggestion. DHA in particular is an excellent fish oil supplement that can be used to help regulate cholesterol synthesis. See, with cholesterol, it's an issue of the amount of fat a person has on hand, how overweight they are, their liver function. There's a number of things involved with this, but when a person becomes more fit in these different areas of diet, exercise, body weight, then the nutrients will work well to support natural health. Nutrients will not overcome a bad diet and bad habits.
Can you imagine somebody in your family, let's say, consuming these statin drugs for a period of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years or more? Do you think that it's markedly more significant the longer the time someone is on it, the adverse events that they experience?
There's no question about it. One of the telling points is the brain. The brain has naturally higher levels of cholesterol in brain cells because brain cells don't split and divide like every other cell in the body. They have to live longer, so they have naturally more cholesterol there. These drugs have been shown in animal studies to reduce the brain level of cholesterol in the cell membranes, causing brain cells to die faster. That is a huge problem. Individuals on these medications will notice 2 years, 3 years, 5 years down the line that their memory is going, their neurologic function is going, their coordination is going. They ask their doctors about it. I hear this all the time. The doctor says, oh, that's just aging. Don't worry about it. It's just aging. Yet these medications are reducing the normal and healthy function of brain cells, while at the same time we have a false and bogus presentation of data out in society saying they prevent Alzheimer's, which they don't even begin to do.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back after these commercial messages with more about the statin drugs. Stay tuned, and if you have a friend or someone who's on the statin drugs, you might want to have them listen to the program. They can hear the program in the archive section of emord.com. And we'll be right back. Stay tuned. Byron, we were talking about ways to reduce your cholesterol levels and improve your overall health involving exercise and dietary modification and then supplementation. Compare for me, if you will, for the average person who has elevated LDL cholesterol, that program versus simple reliance on the statin drugs and no other lifestyle modification. In the long term, what's going to be better for somebody to reduce their risk of a heart attack and a stroke?
The number one thing that's going to reduce the risk of a heart attack and a stroke in any person is building up their relaxed reserve bank account of a good feeling in their body. This is accomplished mostly through relaxing exercise, meditation, things of that sort. But when a person goes and walks on a consistent and regular basis or jogs, as long as they're not getting exhausted from their own exercise and indeed are getting a positive response to that exercise, that is the single one most health-fortifying cardiovascular tip there is. It's been proven to be as effective as any cardiovascular medication in any combination for longevity purposes. So exercise is the core foundation for anybody in this situation.
So when we look at cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, we're looking at one biological factor that may or may not be a contributor to the risk of heart attack and stroke. In fact, our prior guest indicated to us that there really is no evidence that lowering cholesterol levels with statins reduces your risk of heart attack and stroke. And in fact, that's what I've seen as well. That's also the position of Dr. John Abramson in Overdosed America. So if your goal, I guess, is to lower your risk of heart attack and stroke, and you depend solely on a drug like that, you're missing the boat, aren't you?
Well, you really are. And the way these drug guidelines are coming down these days, they are trying to get people to levels of LDL that they couldn't possibly achieve with a good diet, exercise, or even nutritional supplementation in most cases. These are abnormal physiologic levels of cholesterol that are completely not in keeping with healthy structure and function of the human body. And we find, like in the Mr. Fit study, which was the biggest study ever conducted on cholesterol-lowering attempts in men, the lower the cholesterol went below 160 total cholesterol, the higher the rates of death. And when it got down to 130 for total cholesterol, the rates of death were as high as people with sky-high cholesterol. It was just a, you know, we're going in the wrong direction with this because we're not understanding that LDL cholesterol is vital to life and it's vital to how the human body makes energy.
In your book, you point out that the drug companies, along with the federal government, have pushed the idea that if some statin, some amount of statin drugs are good, more is better, and that people are being urged by their physicians to take higher quantitative doses of the statins to bring those LDL levels lower and lower and lower. What is the consequence of that as a national policy? What are we going to see in America as a result of that?
It's going to significantly de-energize individuals and create all kinds of other health problems in their bodies, because energy is needed for all healthy function in any system in the body. And when you take a medication that just blanketly de-energizes people, basically almost anything can happen. It's a huge
issue. How is it?
I mean, it's just huge.
Well, one of the things that I don't understand is how your family physician could recommend this drug to you after watching it have debilitating effects upon you due to your use of it over a period of time. I mean,
these people are completely in fear of their own licensing boards. And the guidelines of their own licensing boards are actually set up by the pharmaceutical companies working in conjunction with the big medical groups like the American Medical Association. You have doctors that are completely not able to operate in a way that they think might actually be useful to their patients. They must follow these guidelines. And when we get these big guidelines coming out to lower the doses of cholesterol, and these are advisory groups of quote-unquote independent experts that all have ties to the drug companies, or six out of nine of them anyway, direct ties to the drug companies, is it any wonder they're recommending that people take more and more of the drugs because it's more and more profits for the drug companies, and it really is against common sense and health for Americans.
Well, Byron, who other than you is speaking out against this? We've got this massive consensus in the medical community and in the FDA saying that more statins are good, that the cholesterol levels should be ever lower and lower, and that these side effects are not significant. I mean, we have just an ignorance, almost a deafness in this community about the side effects.
Well, the British Medical Journal, as a journal, has over the years spoken up against this as one major effort. And they did just publish an article this week based on Swedish research that cautioned that these higher and higher levels of cholesterol medication showed no real benefit and had extreme risks for cardiomyopathy and other factors, whether it's cancer or brain or nerve-related problems. So it is getting addressed. But we have a $20 billion a year industry in America. That's more than all professional sports combined. This is a huge industry for one single drug that really doesn't hold up to its promise, Jonathan.
Well, how do we get out of this, Byron? What do we have to do as a people to change this environment?
People have got to get themselves back on a healthy track. It is very clear that if a person has better levels of cholesterol through their 40s and 50s, they are going to have less heart disease when they are older. But it's not because they took drugs to get it there. It's because they were healthier. So we have to get people consistently exercising, making the time for that, having the energy for that. We have to get people eating better. We need to clean up our environment, the toxins in our food supply, the pollution in our air, even the medications that are given in multiple different kinds and numbers are major challenges to the cholesterol, to healthy cholesterol function. We need to clean these things up so we stop inflaming the circulatory system, which is what really damages cholesterol and plaques arteries. When we look at what causes this inflammation, it goes back to cleaning up the environment, cleaning up the food supply, and doing a lot of healthy things correctly.
We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with our concluding remarks from Byron Richards on the statin crisis in America. If you're taking statins, if you know somebody who is, and undoubtedly you do, you probably want to have them hear this program, hear this broadcast. It will be in the emore.com archives. So go there to get an edition of the program. Talk to you in just a few minutes. Here comes the commercial.
Welcome back to Health Law and Politics with our host, constitutional lawyer, Jonathan Emort.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about the statin drugs, some of the most commonly prescribed drugs in America, and these drugs are dangerous. And there are over 20 million Americans taking the statin drugs, 25 million or more, taking the statin drugs every day, and in the process, they're increasing their risk of cardiomyopathy, increasing their risk of heart attack and stroke, the very thing the substances are designed or supposedly designed to reduce your risk of by lowering cholesterol levels, increasing memory problems, increasing fatigue, increasing the risk of certain cancers, a whole host of adverse effects, including kidney problems and liver problems, come with these drugs, and through use of them year in, year out, people are putting themselves at ever greater risks of having problems. And we know these problems are occurring now, and they're going to get much worse because the government has just lowered the cholesterol level, the LDL cholesterol level, required for recommendation of these drugs, and doctors are recommending them to people without any active cardiovascular disease as a preventive when people are absolutely healthy and have no signs of cardiovascular disease. They simply have LDL of 130 or more. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have a massive infrastructure promoting these drugs. And, Byron, the government has, as your book points out, the government is implicated in this. In Byron's book, Fight for Your Health, Exposing FDA's Betrayal of America, he talks about the FDA's culpability for allowing drugs like this into the market and then promoting and protecting the drug company's interests throughout. Byron, what do we do with the Food and Drug Administration? Is it hopelessly corrupt? And if it is corrupt, how do we end this regime of abuse that is allowing unsafe substances into the marketplace?
Well, the FDA has got to get back onto their public mandate of protecting the public. And we see just even this week with their new drug labels that they're doing everything they can to undermine the rights of citizens who are damaged by drugs in state courts, with this preemptive law thing, that they're snuck onto the new labels that are coming out next month. I mean, this operation is clearly a drug company promotional activity that has to be changed. Congress has got to get involved. We have to protect our health freedoms. I mean, it's just a huge issue, and it's going to take a lot of people becoming aware of what they're doing and understanding some of these things, especially on a subject like cholesterol, because just thinking of cholesterol in terms of good or bad, it just doesn't crack it. The American public has to get more educated. Jonathan, on my website, which is wellnessresources.com, I have a lot of information about cholesterol, natural options for cholesterol, and the book you've been talking about, Fight for Your Health. People can check that out if they want to know more, because I have several hundred scientific references in the Fight for Your Health book that clearly explain how this cholesterol issue works. But by better public education, better consumer awareness of the issues, and then bringing to bear on the FDA responsibility for drug safety, not undermining our rights, that's where this has got to head, or we're just in big trouble.
You know, one thing that you never hear about, but is certainly an important medical point, homocysteine levels. I mean, we always hear about cholesterol, but we never hear about homocysteine levels. Tell us why homocysteine... Oh, there we go. We're just about done with the program. Byron, I just want to thank you so much for being on the program again. It's been very interesting and informative. Thank you for being with us. Ladies and gentlemen, next week's program will look at nutritional influences on health. We're going to see that nutrients can treat disease despite what the FDA is trying to prevent you from knowing. So we will tell you what the FDA does not want you to hear in next week's program. See you then.
You've have been listening to Health, Law, and Politics on the TalkStar Radio Network. Listen next Saturday at the same time as Jonathan Emord once again critically examines federal government health regulations.